I'd like to have the next speaker, please. It's Alexander Litham from University of Georgia.
Hello. Thank you for staying until the end. So, in this research, we were looking at the water use of tomato plants and trying to get an estimation of the water requirement on any given daily day. The research was conducted in the University of Georgia inside of a greenhouse using one of these benches and having long PVC pipes running down and across as the main irrigation lines and splitting off into separate valves to open up for each line representing an experimental unit. So if you look at how the pods is set up here, you can see that in the actual layout, we would have with every line representing one valve, one experimental unit with four plants inside, and repetitions of four lines all across, split into blocks, with a computer data logger put into the middle of the bench, which I'll get to in a minute. The study of the focus was to really get an idea of the water use from moneymaker tomatoes and gather data from the beginning of its life in a well-watered germination situation and see what the water use would be from then on out through the course, looking at all the factors that may affect the water use as the environmental factors of daily light integral, temperature, humidity, and of course size, with the goal being that trying to predict what the water requirements of the plants are going to be before that demand actually exists. So to understand what the water use would be, we have to get an idea of the inputs that go into the plants for water use, and it doesn't just go into all transpiration. Of course, there's metabolites that are dependent on photosynthesis, so light is also a very big factor. Temperature and humidity also looked at, which are used as a function of vapor pressure and vapor pressure deficit in driving water moisture through the stomates of the leaves. And on that note, also the age and size of the plant is also important on that note. Now, the importance of actually having enough water might not seem that critical until, of course, you don't have it, and then you're left with either not having anything or paying a high premium for it. Municipal water is not always an option for everyone, depending on where the grower resides, and water reservoirs may, in times of drought, dry up and be insufficient for their crops. Additionally, there are some growers that do depend on gravity-fed systems from water tanks on top of a hill that can't easily replenish these tanks between irrigations as quickly as they would want to in problems of excessive or limited availabilities. So to get an idea of what exactly was going on, we had to, of course, gather a lot of data throughout the day, and being that I can't be there 24/7, or at least I would like not to be there 24/7, we had to figure out a way to record all this environmental data to get a better idea. So looking at the light that comes from the sun, we could gather that information with a light core light sensor, which would feed that directly into the data logger. Additionally, a weather station would feed temperature and humidity data to the data logger, and all of a sudden now we have temperature, humidity, and light information gathered continuously throughout the day, every day. And so along with that, all we have to do is measure the soil moisture of the plants, and we can get an idea of how often the plants are needing to be irrigated, and thus turning on a solenoid, opening up the valves, and watering the plants as needed. So in this study then, we used the Campbell Scientific Data Logger and managed the plots all across the bench. Data was recorded every 20 minutes. Scans were actually done every 10 minutes, but data was recorded looking at the two scans per each session, and then, of course, recorded again on a daily basis. So from that information, then, we're able to get a nice little bit of information looking at the fluctuations in daily light integral. As you can see, it really does change quite a bit depending on whether it was sunny, rainy, overcast, or so forth. Luckily, we don't have hurricanes up there, so it's a little bit less than we think. Temperature and humidity are also being able to be accurately seen here. Temperature, we try to maintain it somewhat stable, and those two factors are able to explain the vapor pressure deficit graph here on the bottom right corner, which is actually a average of each day, just to show it a little bit more easily, because vapor pressure deficit does fluctuate a lot more throughout the day than that. So when we actually look at the actual water that was used by our plants, we see that there is a growth throughout the age of these plants, but it's not exactly linear. There is still a fluctuation. And what was important is to figure out why is this fluctuation going on, if we can use the information we have about the environment to better understand what the requirement would be. So creating a model that was based on the environmental factors and the size, age of the plants, we're able to see that it is possible to create a model that would more or less fit the requirements, or at least predict what the requirements of the water of the plants are going to be on any given day. The model actually fits quite well and is able to describe the water needs of the crops by about 95% of everything that's actually going into or describing the water use of these plants. And so the daily water use of the tomato plants in this case are a function of its age, or the size of the plants, and as described by age, the vapor pressure deficit, the daily light integral, and interaction between the age and the vapor pressure deficit. Moving on to a newer study, we tried to apply this model now to a recent study, which this is data gathered from a study that was going on until last week. So I was lucky enough to gather enough of this information to be able to see how well this fit to show you, and as you can see, it actually lines up fairly well. And of course, in order to do so, we had to gather the daylight integral, temperature, humidity, vapor pressure deficit information to make sure that we could add in that model. Now, this is actually very beneficial for growers, because even though you might not find yourself in a limited situation for water, reducing excessive irrigations does benefit in forms of finance, because not only are you reducing and overall being more helpful to the conservationist effort of being a better steward of the land, but you're also reducing your energy consumption, less labor, and of reducing your losses of what would be potential yield losses from under irrigation. Of course, every crop would have its own water requirements, and it's important to try to fit this model and calibrate it to every type of crop. And an interesting thing that actually came up during the study was that the model shifts as the plants go through their phases in life, from germination to early vegetative, later vegetative, and going into fruit set. So it'd be interesting to continue on and look at the way that the model would actually shift, looking at specifically the changes in each one of these phases. So the impact of drought, though, is very much real, and overwatering is less and less of a possibility. Not only is it rather expensive if you have to go and get municipal water in the event that your reservoirs or water tanks go empty, but also for some people it's not even that possible to actually get municipal water. Our hope is also to be able to link some of this data with local weather data, or at least be able to go online and get update real-time information so that growers can actually use this to make up-to-the-minute decisions on their irrigation planning and better better plan their future. Of course, something that I came across that I thought was kind of funny was the event of having too much water and then the possibility of someone coming around and deciding that, well, if you have a lot and I don't, maybe I could get a little. I'd like to thank everyone who made it possible, University of Georgia, my professors, Dr. Van Ursel and Dr. Malati, our technician, and the grants to make it possible for me to be here today. Thank you very much.
So we have time for questions.
You didn't happen to measure soil temperature during the process.
Well, we were using data on GS3 sensors, so that data is there. Although the soil temperature is something that I really didn't try to put into the model, I did notice that it more or less stayed near the ambient air temperature. So, I mean, obviously a little bit of a difference, but not so much that I would actually prefer that over the actual air temperature.
I don't know if you mentioned the type of growing media you were using.
Oh, it was just 1P farad soil. Is that correct? I think so.
Pafford.
Yes. Maybe. More?